From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of January, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, will be here to take up the cash grain market. Along the way, Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, will tell us about the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll check in with Gary Schnitke. He's penned a brand new article for the Farm Doc Daily website. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, and you guessed it, of course, it's on crop insurance, this time on the GRIP program, G-R-I-P. It all comes up during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The corn futures were higher, so was the wheat, but the beans were a bit lower on the day. March wheat futures at 641 and a quarter, up 7 3/4. The May at 656 and a quarter, 5 1/2 higher. In July, 671 and a quarter, up a nickel. March corn 4 1/4 higher at 634 1/2. The May at 640 and a quarter, up 5 cents. And July, $6.44, up 5 1/2. September corn, $5.87 3/4 higher. December futures, $5.63, finished up 1/2 cent. March bean futures, $12.13 1/2, 6 1/2 cents lower. May futures, $12.22 3/4, down 6. July at $12.32 1/2, down 5 1/2. And the August soybeans at $12.30 1/4 cents, down 3 3/4. September futures, down 1 1/4 at $12.21 1/4. November at $12.13 3/4, up 3/4 of a cent on the afternoon. Bean meal at $3.21.10, down 2.40. Bean oil at $51.39, 4 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract in the February at $125.85, up a nickel on the afternoon. April at $129.17 1/2, unchanged. January feeder cattle at $152.52 1/2, up 20. The March at $155, up 12 1/2 cents. And February lean hogs on the day at $86.62 1/2, 60 cents higher. April futures $88.22 1/2, up 37 1/2 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil in the March contract at $99.66 a barrel, up 71 cents. Ethanol at 218 and 3/10. That's 0.8 of a cent higher. Natural gas at 274, 18 and 6/10 of a cent higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 0.2 of a cent at $3.02 6/10 of a cent. Gold futures on the day at $1,699.80 an ounce, up $35. Or rather, up $35.60, and the dollar at 79.57. That's down 0.29 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening, a slight chance of rain. That'll happen before midnight. And then a slight chance of rain or freezing rain. Mostly cloudy this evening with a low around 30 degrees. Southeast winds at about 6 miles an hour. It'll become calm with a chance of precipitation set this evening at 20%. Tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high of 42. Calm winds becoming west-northwest. Westerly at 7 to 10. Winds could gust as high as 15 tomorrow, and then Thursday night, partly cloudy. A low of 25 degrees with west-northwest wind at 8 to 10 miles an hour. Gusting as high as 15. Friday, we should see sunny skies, a high of 42 with a north-northwest wind. Friday night, mostly cloudy, and a low of 27. On Saturday, sunny skies, a high of 37. Saturday night, partly cloudy, and a low of 21 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday, we should see sunny skies, a high of 30. Sunday night, cloudy and 21. Monday, partly sunny skies and a high of 41 degrees. And Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 33. On Tuesday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, the high near 48. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the end of the program. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. This is the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us now, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, folks are signing up very quickly for our all-day Ag Outlook. And just this quick note on that, it is March the 6th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll sell about 350 tickets. 60 of them are gone, 64, I suppose, by this time. And if you want to buy those tickets, you can do that. Just dial this number, 217-333-7300. That's 333-7300 at the 217 area code. We will take purchases today and tomorrow, but not Friday and Monday because the staff member's out of town. So if you're wanting to buy those tickets now, you can. If not, you can wait until next week, but they're going quickly, so you might want to dial in. Hey, Paul, tell me about the marketplace for the day.
And while people are traveling around, stop up at Gordyville at the
right.
ADM booth and say hi to Justin and Kathy and the whole team.
Is Wicker there today, too?
Hopefully Dan will be coming in on this kind of a sleet, icy-covered road.
Oh, that's okay. You can make your way over there to Gordyville. That's a good place to go.
And anyway, what happened today? Well, the markets opened and started up, and then they sold off a little bit, a weaker corn basis. And then Bernanke basically made a statement that interest rates would be low, clear up to 2014 on basically a low inflation rate and a subpar economic outlook. The dollar weakened, and crude gold and silver are up quite a bit. The corn basis actually weakened from 80 over the March to 78 over. There was cash movement noted. Basically, an excellent weather forecast in the South America. Most of the wheat country belt, by my meteorologists that I talked to, have adequate snow cover in Russia. There is some basic reasons why corn is higher, and it's based on the factor that export demand has picked up in the last couple of weeks, and that's encouraging basically catching, and a strong farmer holding action has cut the probably the exporters a little short bought, and the farmers are very reluctant to sell 640 corn as well as 540 new crop corn. It's just too cheap in their opinion, and the market basically struggles on.
It sounds, and you can correct me, are you thinking that maybe the market's not too cheap, at least for the old crop at this point on that sale?
Well, that's a good question. I guess 650 and north, I would have been sold out already. There was general a feeling, on Commodity Week and some of the meetings, the Outlook meetings we're at, basically there's people caught, both in the futures market and also the cash market. My general impression is that, you ask an excellent question there on Commodity Week, can we see 650 corn? And I didn't think we'd see it till maybe the summertime, and it could be faster. I don't think we're looking at 675 or anything like that, but the market does have a function. There does seem to be a pretty good supply with the rain that's occurred of exportable corn out of Argentina, maybe 10-12 million tons. There'll be exportable corn out of Brazil, and lots of feed wheat, particularly Australia. So there seems to be adequate supplies. It's a function of the marketplace to get the cash and futures closer together, and that's where the fireworks will fly here in the next 30 to 45 days.
Back to something you mentioned earlier, the Fed, of course, met today, and they said, hey, we're going to hold these interest rates until 2014. I'm wondering why the trade and or the journalist reacted so much to that, because they told us that in October or September of the fall of 2011 and that we'd be there for 3 years. I think that 2011 and 3 is 2014. It surprised me that there was much of a reaction to
that.
Well,
we pushed it on down the road, and commodity funds, you know, bought 10,000 corn today, 2,000 wheat, 4,000 beans. Gold is up, silver's up, and it put a little bit of saying, you know, things aren't going quite as expected. We have these tremendous problems, of course, in Europe, and employment is getting, you know, dropping 8.5%. But the big factor here is that it basically went out and said we're committed to this getting employment down and speeding the U.S. economy up.
Okay. Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much. That's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. He'll be at our All-Dag Outlook meeting. That's the 6th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'd like you there as well. If you'd like a ticket, they're $25. You can call today right now at 217-333-7300 and reserve your space for our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Report. Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee says senators will take a careful look before writing a new U.S. farm law. Debbie Stabenow says, quote, "It's not about rushing." Stabenow says her committee will use February and possibly longer for information gathering hearings. Stabenow declined to suggest when bill drafting would begin. It was Stabenow's first outline of farm bill action this year. President Barack Obama said last night in his State of the Union address that the country needs an all-out, all-of-the-above strategy to develop every available source of American energy. The president called for eliminating subsidies for oil and investing more in natural gas production. The president also said that his administration would act without Congress to open federal lands for clean energy production and spur more natural gas development. In pushing his energy proposals, the president noted the nation's supply of natural gas can last nearly 100 years. A coalition of over 80 U.S. business groups on Tuesday raised concerns about President Barack Obama's plan to create a new Department of Trade by consolidating the relatively small office of the U.S. Trade Representative with five other agencies. In a letter to the president, the groups said, quote, "We believe that such a move will weaken the ability of USTR and the United States to pursue effectively a strong trade policy that is responsive to Congress, business, and other stakeholders." National Crop Insurance Services says that insurers' indemnity payments to U.S. farmers for their 2011 crop totaled more than $9 billion. That's a record. The payments, which topped the record of $8.67 billion hit in 2008, could climb even higher, surpassing $10 billion as the remaining claims are settled. Severe drought clipped yields of wheat and cotton in the Southern Plains states in 2011, while extreme heat hit corn crops in the Midwest. The devastating March 2011 tsunami and shift in manufacturing overseas plunged Japan's trade account into the red for the first time since 1980. The $32 billion deficit for 2011 reflected a surge in energy imports to cover shortfalls caused by the disaster and a 2.7% decline in the value of Japan's exports. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, For up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is a Farm Doc Daily podcast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke here to take up his latest FEFO. This one about crop insurance and the GRIP program, those group risk income plans, how they will have changed under the new conditions released by USDA and RMA for the 2012 growing season. You took a look at them county by county. What did you find across the state, Gary?
Yeah, there's no basic difference in GRIP from this year to the last year. However, each year GRIP updates expected yields and also may change the premium rates. And this year, RMA changed the premium rates. And roughly what it does is it increases GRIP premiums 10% for corn and 11% for soybeans across Illinois.
That is entirely different than what we've been talking about, that there was a re-rating that dropped most of the insurance products lower for the premiums.
Yeah, the re-rating was for the combo product or the individual farm level products. And so we're seeing the premiums on those individual farm level products go down. At the same time, you're seeing GRIP premiums go up. So those farmers that are taking GRIP may want to reevaluate that decision because, you know, it's getting more expensive to take GRIP and less expensive to take a farm-level crop insurance like RP.
The primary differences between GRIP and the combos are?
The primary difference is the level of farm yield or level yields used in the insurance. GRIP is a county yield program or a county revenue program, so it matters what happens at the county. Combo product RP is a revenue program at the farm level, so it's farm yields that matter. So that's the big difference.
Okay, take me through GRIP and how it's changed by county and region or...
Yeah, what we've seen this year, GRIP premiums have increased, and again, it's about a 10% increase over much of the state. We're looking at premiums for the 90% coverage level and the 100% protection level, which would be the highest, ranging from something over $100 an acre down to roughly $60 an acre for the product. Again, most of those rate or premiums have increased by about 11%.
How many acres in Illinois usually insured in GRIP? 1.3 million for corn?
Yep. There's last year there was 1.3 million acres of corn, use of GRIP on corn. That's down substantially from its high in 2006. And the reductions in GRIP use are likely due to the decreases in farm level premiums over time and the general increase in the GRIP premiums over time.
In your article, you say that represents the 1.3 million from last year, about 13% of the corn acres. The high in 2006 was 3.2 million, not quite three times that much, but about 60% higher, I suppose, than
yeah.
GRIP from the previous year. What were the reasons producers moved away from GRIP in that case?
And what we've been seeing is a movement away. Farm level producer premiums have decreased in price from a couple of reasons: the enterprise introduction in 2008, and just a general lowering of premiums. We also seen the premiums increase on GRIP because of subsidy reductions and just a general increase in GRIP premiums. Volatilities has also played into that. Since 2006, volatilities on used in calculating premiums have gone up, and that has impacted GRIP more than it has the combo product.
Expected yields play a large portion of the reason you use GRIP and how it's insured?
Yep. Every county has an expected yield, and GRIP or RMA adjusts those yields. This year from last year, on average, expected yields for corn increased 0.9 bushels. We did see some there are quite a few counties with expected yield declines, and that's due to the methodology that they use in calculating expected yields.
You know, the five highest counties are in central Illinois: Warren, Macon, McDonough, Woodford, and Tazewell. The lowest counties are in southern Illinois. Those are Perry, Franklin, Williamson, and Jefferson for corn. GRIP important for soybeans, too?
We've seen less use in soybeans, less than a million acres. Again, we've seen GRIP premiums increase for soybeans, about 11% increase. Overall, expected yields have increased by 0.9 bushels for soybeans, and there weren't any county, or there were only two counties in which expected yields decreased.
And then one final tidbit, and maybe the most important part, because GRIP pay in for the premium expected to exceed or not now exceed.
We still see for corn in most counties the payments over time will average higher than what farmers paid into it, and that's because of the subsidies involved. Soybeans, we don't observe that as much. Still, and we do see that, but the cost of the GRIP premiums are going up.
And while that's the case, it's important this year that producers take a look at crop insurance, as always, but especially to reevaluate the combo package as opposed to the GRIP.
Yep, the premium increases on GRIP, as well as the premium reductions on the combo product, as well as the trend adjustment on the combo product, will likely all cause farmers want to reevaluate their crop insurance decisions.
Thanks so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. That's a Farm Doc Daily podcast. You can read Gary's article online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Wednesday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Tara Oliver on the phone line. Hi, Tara.
Hello, how are you today?
I am very well. Can you tell me about cash grain movement in the area there around Delphi?
Yeah, we've actually seen pretty significant interest this week. Basis has really kind of lit up in our area. We've seen a pretty significant push stronger since last week. It didn't feel like grain wanted to move much after the USDA report, and the markets took a pretty big hit. So basis has done a little bit more work for us, and we've started to see some cash grain starting to flow this week.
And how tight is your basis at this point?
Right now, at Climbers, we are posted at 18 over. I think that's pretty typical for a lot of the ethanol plants in our area. They're somewhere in the 15 to 20 over range. And down at the elevator in Delphi, we are at 10 over.
So you weren't kidding. Basis is really doing
the work.
Yeah. So you how much did you close up then? Did you close, 20 cents or more? Or was it high, or were you at above as we went through the beginning weeks of January?
In the beginning weeks of January, our basis was, we'd probably come up about 10 to 12 cents since where we started January at. We started the month at about an 8 over basis. So we've had, seen a 10 cents basis appreciation since the first of the month.
How long do you think you'll be this high above the trade?
I think the biggest thing right now is just enticing some producer movement. We haven't seen really a whole lot of movement since probably the 1st of January. So if these numbers start to entice movement, which from what we've seen the past couple days and with the board rally, it has started to get some grain flowing, I think that basis will kind of stabilize here. But rail values have been good as well. So in order for processors to stay competitive over the train shippers, they're going to have to be somewhat of a premium to them.
And very quickly, your bids, please.
Cash corn at Delphi is $6.44. Cash corn at Climber, $6.52, and cash beans at Delphi are $11.95.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Tara.
Thank you.
Tara Oliver with the Climber's facility in Delphi, Indiana.
It's National Irish Coffee Day. It's also Dinner Party Out Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, in Shays' Rebellion, a group of poor farmers protesting high taxes marched into Springfield, Massachusetts to seize the federal arsenal. Shays' Rebellion caused George Washington to emerge from retirement to advocate a stronger national government. In 1799, the Lycum Spooner of Vermont patented a gravity-feed seed planting machine. but it was not until 1840 that a truly practical seed planting machine was developed when Joseph Gibbons received a patent for a machine that combined a grain drill with cavities to deliver the seed and a device to regulate the volume. In 1915, Alexander Graham Bell inaugurated U.S. Transcontinental Telephone Service, speaking from New York to Thomas Watson in San Francisco. By the way, the phone line used 2,500 tons of copper wire and 130,000 telephone poles. In 1945, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters topped the charts with Don't Fence Me In. By the way, Crosby recorded the song without ever having previously heard of it or seen it. And in 1955, U.S. and Panama signed the Panama Canal Treaty. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Hope you're doing the same.
Oh, I'm doing very well. Made my way across the campus during the noon hour. It spit and spat just a little bit, and looks like on the radar there's some storms about. What can you tell me about the weather in our part of the world?
Well, it is just spits and spats, I think, at this point in time. Most of the energy that we've had came out of the southern plains overnight last night and has worked its way into the Ohio River Valley, portions of the Tennessee River Valley, and lower Mississippi River Valley. So those are the areas that will be focused for precipitation over this next 24-hour period. We'll probably end up with a few locations down to the south of us getting some 1- and 2-inch amounts of rain. It'll be a continuation of the wet weather bias that we've come to know so well during La Nina events. That corridor for the Ohio River Valley and parts of the Delta and Tennessee River Basin are all part of that game. And we're probably going to see that continuing periodically as we move forward through the rest of winter and into the first few weeks in spring. But in the near-term forecast, though, that is the only place where we'll see precipitation of significance. We are in a northwesterly flow pattern aloft, and we will be seeing most of our source air coming from Canada, and so it will be trending cooler this weekend in particular. Temperatures will probably fall back into a near to slightly below average range. We'll have a couple of waves of light snowfall moving across the region. Nothing that will cause a big problem for livestock or for winter wheat conditions or even for travel across the area.
And then if you take a look at South America for me, what do you see at that point?
Well, it certainly looks like Argentina is fighting real hard to stay out of trouble now. They've lost a lot of production potential earlier in the season. We had some timely rain occur on Monday of this week, and looks like we're going to be free and clear of precipitation now until we get into the weekend coming up and on into early next week when scattered showers and thunderstorms will return once again. I think we're in a position now where the driest weather in Argentina will be shifting eastward in the month of February, so a lot of the main corn and soybean areas will probably start seeing rain a little bit more routinely, and we'll do a little bit better. Now, that means that southern Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay will all probably do a little less well. In other words, they will see less precipitation and have warmer temperature biases, and we may see an expansion of dryness and crop stress occur in some of those areas, including Rio Grande do Sul, western Paraná, as well as Paraguay and Uruguay.
At this time, do you have a good estimate on how much of the crop has been hurt in South America and how badly?
Well, I'm trying to assess that, but having a lot of trouble doing it. The vegetative health index that we use here quite often, it's a satellite interpretation of damage done to crops, looks very similar to that of 2008-2009. And in that particular year, the losses were pretty substantial. I think we've got a few areas that are in worse shape, like parts of Cordoba and Santa Fe. But other areas they're doing much better than they did in that particular year, and that includes north central Buenos Aires and Entre Rios. So it's kind of a toss-up, but I would have people go back and look at the 2008-09 year and take a look at the damage done then, and we'll probably be similar to that, if not just a tad bit less damage.
Drew, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
You betcha, and have yourself a great day.
Hey, you too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great day, too. I'm Todd Gleason.